This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, and for everyone who wants to know how to get their book published. I am so happy today that I have a really wonderful guest, one of the really leaders in the whole literary agency world, and I am so excited that Regina Brooks has joined us today. Hi, Regina.
Hi, how are you?
Wow.
So glad to be here.
Oh, I am so happy to have you on. You know, I've over the years, I've seen your name here, seen your name there, of course, read your wonderful book, How to Write, Sell, and Market Your Memoir. And,
yes.
You know, I think it was Jessica Strasser maybe who said to me that your workshop on Writer's Digest for memoir writing was like one of the most popular they've ever had.
Oh, wow. That's excellent. Yeah, I really do enjoy doing their webinar. I usually do it maybe twice a year, and there are usually quite a few people who, what I do for them is I do a workshop, and then people are able to send me their proposals, and I'll critique their proposals. So I think that's one of the popular parts about it. I think one of the things that's very difficult for especially memoirists is trying to figure out what in the world is making people pass on it, and oftentimes they don't even know that they need to do a proposal. They just generally will write the book and start submitting that. But agents typically want to see a proposal too.
Well, that's why I think your workshop is so good, and your book is so good. And there's so many things actually I want to talk to you about. I want to talk about the memoir book, but let's first introduce my listeners to your agency, because you have one of the top, I know it's one of the top 25 agencies in New York, and you are an amazing person in and of yourself. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is so funny. Of course, you are an aerospace engineer.
I am.
And my husband is an aeronautical engineer, and both of you are private pilots. And so I know that you guys in the aerospace aeronautical field are always so brilliant. And that you can really do anything. And that's really a wonderful thing about being an engineer. I think one of the you really are able to organize yourself. And so you have certainly, when you switched over from wanting to be an astronaut to becoming an agent, you really became a super agent.
Well, you know, one of the things that I usually tell people, because I get this question a lot, like, how did you switch from aerospace engineering to editorial and then ultimately into agenting? And really, you're using, as an editor, you're using the same side of your brain as that you would as an engineer, because an engineer looks at a system and tries to figure out how is that system going to fail, and let's figure it out and make sure that it doesn't. And that's the same thing that an editor does. They look at the system, and the system is the book, and they look to see, okay, are the characters well developed? Does the plot hold up? Is there a narrative arc? Does the dialogue work? And we're trying to make sure that the writer is able to have a very, very smooth manuscript so that when the reader or the consumer starts to read it, there aren't any holes. So it's kind of the same side of my brain when using engineering and editing.
Exactly. And, of course, being very smart, because it's like my husband also, when he was no longer an aeronautical engineer, he could go into construction and he could go into other businesses. And at the same concept there, that you have this side of your brain where you're logical, sensible, and you can plan things out, which is so important with an agent, because that's what you want an agent to be able to look at your work and then to plan your career, not just one book.
And you know what, Patsy, one of the things, too, that I really love is the fact that I actually have left brain and right brain, because before I went into engineering, I used to be into the arts. I went to the School of the Arts in Rochester, New York, and majored in theater and dance, and with a minor in voice. And so I use kind of both sides of the brain. So when a person comes to me and they want me to look at the business side of the process, I can also infuse in some creative elements to help them kind of expand their intellectual property in a way that people will be able to embrace it, and they'll say, "Oh gosh, this is a new way of looking at this." So I think, like, when you're looking for an agent, you really have to decide what type of agent you need. Some people just need someone who will be able to, you know, just handle the business side. And some authors need people to really be able to look at the manuscript and figure out ways that they can make it even better.
Well, you certainly do. And I know you have such a wonderful reputation as an. I think it was Jessica Strasser who, you know, she is such a delightful person. And she said something, you know, to the effect that, while when you are looking for an agent, you want somebody like you, who really can do that, both sides, and to read a manuscript and see both the potential and also the art.
That's right. Yeah.
And you certainly have. And I want to talk to you about more about memoirs, but I do want to mention that one of the books that you've published is, gotten published, is Miss Crandall's School for Young Ladies and Little Misses of Color. Now, I love poetry, and I was very honored that I had the poet laureate Juan Felipe Herrera on my program, and we were talking about poetry and how wonderful it is to love poetry, because there you can find such depth in it, and I love that book.
Oh, yeah. So that's Marilyn Nelson. Marilyn Nelson is one of my authors. She was the poet laureate of the state of Connecticut. And she used to run this wonderful poetry retreat space in Connecticut. And she has written numerous books. She's a 3-time National Book Award finalist. Just a cadre of awards. And I really enjoy working with her. On the poetry side, though, as an agent, I typically only work with poets who are working on children's books. The adult space, you know, there are wonderful poets out there, but unfortunately, unless you're kind of like on the academic side of poetry, it can be very difficult to get a good book deal. And what I mean by a good book deal, so as your audience probably already knows, agents, not-for-fee agents, we don't get paid until we sell the book. And typically, the advances and commissions on poetry can be relatively low.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, most agents live in New York City, and we have expensive rents. And so we want to make sure that we're looking at projects that are going to yield us, you know, significant financial reward. And like I said, I love poetry. I used to write poetry myself, and I represent poets who write children's books, and Marilyn is one of those people. And she writes, and the way her, one of the things that makes her so special is that she does novels in verse. So basically, you're reading a book, but it's in a poetry format, or you're reading a novel, I should say, in poetry format.
Which is delightful.
Just a collection of poems, but there's a narrative arc to the whole, there's a story there. One of her most recent books, she did a memoir in the poetry format, where she told her story. So it's just that the poetry space is, you know, really, really, I think there's some unique ways to enter that marketplace.
But of course, one of the best areas, certainly that I think is a expanding area, is the young adult, the YA market. And I wanted to mention, because this is coming up, I was very excited that your 8th annual YA Discovery Contest is starting on November 1st.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. So I guess it was 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, I wrote a book called Writing Great Books for Young Adults. And that book was designed to help people who were interested in entering the young adult market to understand what it was about, understand how to write for it. You know, there were a number of adult writers who were saying, oh my gosh, these people are, you know, the young adult writers, they're making so much money. How do I start writing books in that area? And, it was during the time when it was even before Hunger Games came out. And as you know, a lot of the young adult books end up turning into films too. So I wrote that book with the mindset of trying to help agents understand how to sell in that marketplace, but also for writers who wanted to enter. And the young adult novel is different from an adult novel in terms of how the characters are developed, the storylines, you know, the subplots and so forth. And as a way of introducing the book to the audience, I started this contest. And the contest has gone on for 8 years now, and I'm so excited about it because as a result of that contest, I've been able to get a number of people book deals. So the way the contest works is, as an agent, you know, we get 200, 300 queries a week easily. And as an author, you really have to capture our interest early. And so the contest is designed where authors will submit the first 250 words of their manuscript, and we evaluate them. And then I have a group of editors from all of the publishing houses, the major publishing houses. They will review the top 20, because so we whittle it down to 20, and then they review them, they give me feedback, and then we pick the top five. And the top five will win numerous awards or rewards. And then usually people in those top five often go on to get agents and or publishing deals. So it's a really, really exciting contest. And I do it during November because November is NaNoWriMo month, which is where people are really encouraged to write a book in a month. So it's, you know, everyone's kind of excited about that, about doing things at that time. So that's when we have the contest.
Well, yeah, my goddaughter, Katie Price, did NaNoWriMo for the first time last November, and she's going to do it again this November. And she was so excited about it. And that is a wonderful event for people to jump into writing. And then now with this, with your pitch contest, really, I think this is a wonderful thing what you're doing.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, you know, a lot of times people, they'll write their book, but they have a really hard time pitching it. Our subline for this contest is no pitch, no query, no problem.
Wow.
That's the first 250 words, and if you capture our imagination and get us excited, then you can go on to get people wanting to read the entire manuscript.
Well, it is really a wonderful opportunity for all of my listeners. It is running right through November. The entry fee is just $15. I mean, you can't beat that. And it is just a wonderful, I think what you're doing is really wonderful for writers, because you're right that this is no query thing. I do have so many writers who will say, oh, you know, I've sent out these query letters and I don't get any response. And this is an opportunity where they can get through to you, hopefully, and convince you that they've got something really great.
Yeah, and the thing about the interesting thing that I often learn by doing this contest is that there are similar tropes that tend to happen. You know, I get hundreds of entries, and when I'll see, oh gosh, this sounds similar to that, or this sounds similar to that. So I think it's a way for me and my agents also to learn what's out there, and for us to keep our finger on the pulse of what seems to be interesting to writers.
And it is true. I also, you know, I get a lot of books sent to me, and I see this pattern where sometimes there's so many all of the same type. So when a book is different, I bet that really grabs you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I also do a number of talks for the writing for the young adult market too. And I talk about, you know, how to really engage and how to make sure that you're familiar with the kind of books that are out there, because, you know, sometimes writers can really become siloed in their own creative minds and their thoughts. And while it may appear to be very fresh to them, you know, it oftentimes is very what we call derivative of other books that are already out there. So, yeah, there's nothing new under the sun, but you really have to twist it up in a way to make it feel fresh and interesting.
And, you know, some people might think that young adult fiction is easier than adult fiction or, you know, regular fiction or whatever they want to call it. But for young adult fiction, you really have to be able to grab these young minds. They're very particular. They really want to feel that the story they're reading, that they could be in that story.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges that I find with adult writers writing for the young adult market is they start to think about what it was like when they were young. And that is like the kiss of death, because it's so different. Young people today are so they're so different. I mean, when I was young, we had the internet, but we didn't have social media. I mean, there's just so many new technologies, and just the way people communicate is so different. And so unless you're doing historical fiction, if you're trying to go back into your mind and think about how you were as a young adult, you are oftentimes going to be missing the mark.
Oh, absolutely. Because young adults today, I mean, they know things that when I was a kid, I mean, I didn't know until I was like almost 40, I didn't know some of this stuff that the kids know today.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But that is really one of the important things of being able to get a young reader to read. And you know, J.K. Rowling did everybody such a favor by capturing young readers and showing everybody that, yes, you can get people to read a 600-page book if it's interesting enough.
And the other thing that she did successfully, along with Scholastic and the marketing folks, is she was able to get adults to read books in the young adult and middle grade space that they wouldn't necessarily have read before. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why the young adult marketplace is so lucrative is because it's not just for young adults. There are a lot of adults reading those books as well.
Oh, absolutely. And there are so many that are really quite brilliant, and they leave you learn something from them, which I think is always wonderful in a book. And in many cases, they touch on subjects like bullying or problems with parents or whatever, that even from a parent's point of view, you read the book and then you can better understand your own children.
That's true. That's very true.
So, yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, I didn't mention, normally, like at the beginning of a introduction, I will tell people, I will say, oh, well, you know, the winner of this or the winner. Well, you have so many things that people have awarded you. I know you got the Stevie Award, and Writer's Digest is thrilled with you, I know. And it's really wonderful what you have been able to do in the business, how you have really been able to turn Serendipity into a major agency.
Yeah, it hasn't been easy. I have been, my agency is 17 years old now. And, you know, agenting, like I was saying, is a very tough business. You know, it's commission, you know, so you really have to be able to find excellent projects, find excellent authors. And I make a distinction, because there are a lot of really good books, but if the authors aren't going to get behind them and really market and promote them, then sometimes they'll die on the vine. So as an agent, you know, my role is to find platformed authors, incredible writing, books that have great hooks, and things that will make not only me excited, but things that I can get editors excited about, and then ultimately readers excited about. And I have four other agents that work with my agency, and as I train them to become brilliant agents, that's my goal, I really want to make sure that they have a good eye for not only the talent of that's represented in the book, but also the talent of the author. And we represent books, but we also represent authors. And the goal of an agent is not just to represent that book, but to represent over the course of time an author's works. And ideally, you want people to continue to write over and over and over really wonderful books so that they can garner an audience.
And of course, now you mentioned a platform, and I wanted to talk to you about that in relationship to people who write memoirs. Because one of the things I love to do, and I do bring on people who have written memoirs quite a bit. You know, I interview, you know, famous authors of thrillers and cozy fiction and all of that. But I do like to have authors who have written memoirs because I think it is so important that these stories be preserved and be told. And so I love to feature memoirs. And when you're looking at somebody who wants to write a memoir or has written a memoir, the platform is very important, isn't it? Can you explain to my listeners who don't understand why they need to have a platform?
Okay, well, let me define platform first, and then I'll tell you why you need one. So basically a platform, it's a way of identifying to an agent or an editor that you have a ready audience that is interested in hearing what you have to say. And once a book is published, that those people will go out and buy the book. And there are all these different ways to identify to an editor or an agent that you have a platform. So you can have like a blog that people read a lot. It goes without saying these days that you have to have a website. Social media platform, meaning, you know, the Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest of the world, showing that you have a robust audience of people who are listening to things that you say on those platforms. You can be a speaker about your topic or a teacher on your topic. You can also be doing podcasts or shows like yours, Patsy, where you're doing radio talks about your topic. Now, specifically for memoir, people will often say to me, well, Regina, you know, there are no other books out there like mine because it's my story. But there's always a topic or a category. So if you're writing a book, a food memoir or a travel memoir, or you have, you know, you've overcome some type of an addiction, or there's all these different categories of memoirs, there are other books that your book can compare to in that category. And you want to be able to show the publishers and your agent that you are invested in that category. So, say, for example, you have overcome breast cancer, and you want to write about your journey, your breast cancer journey, then it's important to have, you know, you might go out and do talks for the American Cancer Association, or different organizations or workshops, or you might speak to other people who are trying to recover from breast cancer. I mean, that's just one example, but you want to be able to show the editor that there are people who want to hear you speak about it, not just that you have a story. Because realistically, we all have interesting stories. On any given Sunday, if we're sitting down for brunch and we're talking to our friends and we're recounting something incredible that's happened to us, you'll hear people say, oh my gosh, you should really write a book about that. But the realistic, honest-to-God truth about it is that, yes, you have an interesting story, and lots of us have interesting stories, but really what makes it commercially viable, is if you're able to take that interesting story and to capture an audience who's interested in hearing about it. And that's what the platform does.
Now, when people ask me, they say, how can I get my book published as a hardback book as opposed to, you know, publishing as a softback book or a paperback book? How easy or difficult is it to get it published as a hardback book? A memoir?
Oh, well, it kind of depends on the publisher and what they think the saleability of the book is. So we have hardcover and we have trade paperback, and then there's mass market. The mass market book, that's a very soft industry right now. Most books are either trade paperback or hardcover, especially for the memoir. And because hardcovers typically they cost a little bit more than the trade paperback, when a publisher is doing what's called a P&L, which is the profit and loss statement, which is helps them to determine how much money they're going to give you as an advance, they'll say, okay, well, if we really want to give her, I don't know, $100,000, we need to publish this in hardcover in order to be able to recoup that money. And normally, if the book is published in hardcover, a year later, 12 months later, and sometimes 18 months later, they will then publish the book in trade paperback. That's kind of the kind of going rule these days. If it starts out in trade paperback, it typically doesn't go back to a hardcover. And a lot of it is about what they think the market will bear. And they'll look at other books in that category and they'll say, it seems like most of the books that are successful in this category tend to be published in trade paperback, so they will start that way.
So are you open for submissions for people who have written memoirs?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And now you want a query letter?
So what I like to see for memoir or any other category for that matter is if it's nonfiction, I want to see a query letter as well as a proposal. And if it's fiction, I want to see a query letter and the first three chapters. And all of this, if you don't remember, all of this information is on my website at serendipitylit.com. Currently, we aren't accepting fiction. However, if you email me and say that you heard me on this show, I will take a look.
Okay, thank you. That's sweet of you. Okay. Yep. And when they submit a proposal, how many pages do you think a good proposal would be?
Oh, it kind of varies. But there are certain elements that need to go in a proposal. So a proposal basically is like a business plan for the book. So you're going to have an overview. You're going to have the table of contents. You're going to have a brief synopsis of the book. You're going to have a section where you compare your book to other books that are similar. You're going to have a marketing section, a bio section, publicity section. So if you think about all the sections that I just mentioned, they're usually a page or more for each section. So usually 10 to 15 pages. And then you also, most agents will want to see the proposal and then sample chapters. And depending on the book, the chapters could be maybe 10 to 15 pages each. So they can, proposals can be pretty robust.
Okay. Well, listeners out there, get your proposals ready and submit them to serendipitylit.com. And Regina will look at them. And, Regina, it's always so exciting for me when somebody will come and say, well, I was inspired. I finally did decide to write, my story. And of course, some stories are big and are great for the wider public. But I'm also happy if people just write even if it's just a family story and they self-publish. I love these kind of memoirs because it does preserve history.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I encourage everyone to, if they have the will and the drive and the story, to put it down. It's for documentation purposes. And, one of the beautiful things about the publishing industry is the fact that you can publish. You can get your book published in a day. there's so many platforms available to people. And, if you've been trying to get with a major publisher and it hasn't worked out, and you really feel convicted to get your book published, I encourage people to do that.
And there have been some nice success stories of self-published people.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, people who have self-published and then gone on to get a major publisher to pick it up, there are a number of ways. It's the whole process has become so much more accessible. And the gatekeepers, for the major publishers, they're still there, but for some of the small imprints, and the small and independent publishers are doing an incredible job. I don't, Patsy, I don't know if you know, but I have an imprint of my own. I'm partnered with two of my colleagues, Marva Allen and Marie Brown, and we have an imprint with Akashic Books that's run by Johnny Temple, and we accept books as well. We usually put out two titles a year, and we've really, really enjoyed that process. So there are a lot of small imprints and publishers out there, too. So if you're not having success with the big publishers, because oftentimes they want these huge platforms and celebrities and that type of thing. But you have a story that can capture an audience. You don't have to get published with a major, you know, the major mainstream publishers. There's a lot of great independent publishers out there. And in fact, over the course of the last several years, a lot of the independent small publishers have won some of the big awards, like even the National Book Award.
Well, that's very encouraging news. I didn't know about your imprint. That's wonderful. And so there's more information about that on your website, too?
Actually, you can go to Akashic Books because we're an imprint under Akashic Books, and you will be able to see information about the imprint is called Open Lens.
Okay, great. Okay, well, that's wonderful to know. And I really, as I said, I am so honored that you have come on the program today because I having seen you, your work in Writer's Digest and of course Publishers Weekly, and you, as I said, you've won the Stevie Awards, and you're just a woman who is dynamic, and you really have shown that hard work can really work, pay off.
I love this job, and I really enjoy working with creative people, and I really appreciate having a chance to talk to your audience too, because you know sometimes as an agent you're constantly, you have your head down, you're speaking, you're reading manuscripts, a significant part of the job, and I just enjoy being able to share whatever information I can with your audience, and you know hopefully inspire a few people to take the manuscripts off of their computer or email them out.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
I think you're fantastic. And I'm, as I said, I'm honored to talk to you. And I want everybody to go to your website and look for the 8th annual YA Discovery Contest. It's going to be running all through November. You can submit for just $15. It is a wonderful opportunity. And you'll get to have a critique from Regina or one of your other people, right? And it's amazing.
Yeah, and I also would love to encourage your audience to follow us on Twitter as well as on Instagram, and we're at Serendipity Lit. You can find us, same handle, and Facebook as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for being on the program today, and we'll have you back on again perhaps after November. You can tell us how this contest went, huh?
Oh, I would love that. I would love that.
And do remember, whenever you have an author who has an interesting book, send it to me, and I will be happy to invite them on the program.
Oh, excellent. I have tons of them.
Okay. Thanks, Nell. It was a joy for me to talk to you. Bye-bye.
All right. Good care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Okay. She's nice. And, wow, has she won awards? Oh, she's won. You know, she won the Woman of the Year by the National Association of Professional Women. That is a really great award. She's a really lovely person. I'm going to take a commercial break, and then when I come back, we're going to have another guest who wrote a memoir, which is what we've been talking about. Okay, take it away, Big Ed.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com. Bay Area Professional Writers Guild and One Point Executive Center invite all writers and wannabe writers of all ages and skill levels to our Freedom to Write workshop, Saturday, October 21st, 8:30 a.m. till noon at the West Shore Plaza, downtown Tampa, inside next to Dick's Sporting Goods. Writers of all ages and skill levels will get professional insight from successful writers and authors on what to write and how to get started, marketing and promoting your writing, and developing a successful freelance writing career. Cost is only $25, deductible to a nonprofit 501c3 charity, including breakfast and all workshop materials, with registration details online at www.bapwg.org. Don't miss this exciting opportunity to expand your freedom to write.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper. And before I get to my next guest, who has written a very interesting memoir, I want to remind everybody that Mike Lindell is running a special promo, his very famous buy one, get one promo. And I want to thank him for supporting Joy on Paper and all of our local and independent authors that I have on the program. All you have to do in order to help me is to go to mypillow.com and use promo code PATZI, Patsy, PATZI, and you will get a buy one, get one deal, which is always wonderful because the pillows are fantastic. Mike Lindell is also fantastic. He has given 50,000 pillows to the people in Houston, and I know he's giving pillows to the people in Puerto Rico when he can get them there. He's just doing all sorts of wonderful things for all of the people who have suffered in these storms. Luckily, we have overcome all of the problems. I have my fingers crossed that we have not had any more problems with our telephone lines or our internet for the past week. So it looks like we're back in shape here in Clearwater, Florida. And we were very lucky that we didn't have more damage. But I just want to tell you, do go to mypillow.com and use promo code Patsy, P-A-T-Z-I. And now, as you know, I mentioned in my first half of the program that one of my interests, of course, is in memoirs. And Regina Brooks loves memoirs and has written a wonderful book on how to write a memoir. And I'm so happy to welcome to the program now Carol E. Anderson. I had to make sure I say the E because there are a lot of Carol Anderson writers out there. Carol E. Anderson, who has written a book called You Can't Buy Love Like That, Growing Up Gay in the 60s. And I am so happy to welcome Carol to the program. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, well, I am thrilled to have you on. You know, as I mentioned, in the first half of the program, I had one of the literary agents from New York who specializes really in memoirs. And I often have, at least once a month, I have an author on who has written a memoir because I believe that it's so important for people to be able to tell their story and to share it with others. And of course, to be inspirational. And I think your book certainly is. And so I want to thank you for joining me today here on Joy on Paper. And let's talk a little bit about the book and about some of the things that you do.
Sure. Well, to tell you a little bit about the book and maybe a little bit about what compelled me to write it, you know, 50 years ago, I couldn't even tell myself that I was gay, and I never imagined that I'd one day write a book about my story. But as the decades passed and, you know, things began to change in the United States, I began to feel compelled, really, to give voice to my personal experience in hopes of helping others see that it's possible to have a joyful and successful and loving life by staying true to yourself. And having been raised in a strong fundamentalist Christian family, and now being almost 70, I felt that I could tell a story from a compassionate point of view that really illuminated more of the complex internal dynamics that almost all gays and lesbians experienced back in that era, and I think, you know, people are still experiencing today. And back then, there were no known transgender individuals who today, I think, also suffer from many of those prejudices.
Well, one of the things about your book is it's beautifully written. You are obviously, you've been writing for a long time.
Well, I've been working at writing for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I said, I love memoirs, and it's always great when I get a memoir that is really, I mean, really well written, and yours certainly is. So you had been a professional writer, right?
Actually, I worked as an organizational consultant for 35 years, and when I flew up, which was my terms for retirement, because I like the image better, sort of like taking off rather than laying back. I actually went back to school and got an MFA in creative nonfiction at Goucher College. And I began really writing the book as a result of that, having to write a manuscript for that work. And I'd taken a lot of workshops in writing that were really helpful, but it felt like Swiss cheese. I didn't know how to put it all together. You know, like I had this piece here and that piece there, but I didn't really know how to create an arc to the story and really put together everything that I was trying to say.
So it took you, did it take you a few years to get this together?
Yes, I would say, you know, a lot of the little pieces I took at workshops became portions of the book. But actually, I also took a really wonderful online workshop called Kickstart Your Memoir with Brooke Warner and her colleague, forgetting her last name, I think, Joy. And for 6 months then, I wrote every day. And that was a precursor to doing my MFA program. And so from that point on until I finished it, it was about 4 years, I would say.
Well, you know, it's as I said, these stories that help people. I mean, they help people to be able, whether it's a story about, you know, your family, or if it's like, sometimes it'll be about a disease, or it'll be like about, I had recently someone who wrote a memoir about epilepsy, and all of these stories, I think they're important to preserve and to inspire other people to realize that, you know, you can find a joy in life. In there might be problems and there might be things that you have to overcome, but you can do it.
I think that's absolutely true, and I know that certainly reading other stories in my life have really inspired me. And back in an era that, it was against the law, it was against all social mores, it was against religion, it was against everything. And what I really began to understand, and growing up in the household I did, I had wonderful parents, and they were really loving people who really inspired me to be a person of character. And they didn't talk about Christian values so much as they talked about the importance of being honest, of being courageous, of being a leader, and things that really set up kind of a very difficult scenario for me, because they saw those traits in me, and yet I was also keeping a secret from them. And I think all people, you know, have had a secret at some point in their life about something. And I really began to realize how that secret really kept me from being close to people. And the underlying theme of my book also is, how do you lead an authentic life while keeping a secret? And I think all of us, you know, one of our biggest tasks in life is to learn how to love ourselves as we are. And we have different things to overcome. You know, sometimes it's an imperfection we feel we have. In my case, it was being gay. But there are many things that we're led to believe are not okay about who we are. And I think going on whatever journey it is to find that self-acceptance and self-love and be able to share that with people and give other people hope for whatever they're dealing with is really an important thing to do.
Well, and I think it is important and inspiring, and we should always say to people that they're not really imperfections, because you are perfect just the way you are. You are made, right. You're made the way you're meant to be, and to take pride in it, and just to be good. If we could get one message through to everybody, is that, like in your case, your parents were good people, and they wanted the world to be good. And I think that's certainly comes through in your writing.
I think that's such an important point, that all of us have the capacity to be good and great human beings, and to find places where we can feel loved by others and feel a sense of belonging is also part of what helps us really embrace the love that is available to us. But we live in a society where so many messages are there to tell us we're not okay. And I really agree with what you said about we're perfect just the way we are.
Exactly.
And sometimes it takes a lot of years to figure that out. but ultimately, it's true.
It is true. And one of the things before I let you go, you know, I don't have that much time. I had to reschedule all sorts of things because of this Hurricane Irma that we had here. I had cancellations, and we had for 2 weeks, our phones went off and on. And I was so happy that today the phones haven't gone off. So I've had my fingers crossed, Stephen, while I was talking to you, that I'd get through this without them going off. But I wanted to mention that for some reason, like, these things happen one after another. I've had guest after guest who have in some way or another been involved with Africa, and they've gone to Africa, and they've been in Africa. And I just wanted you to mention a little bit about your African adventure.
I had started an organization called Rebellious Dreamers when I turned 50, and it was there to support women to live their dreams, since most women, you know, support everybody else's dreams. And we had given microloans to a group called First Step Initiative, and they were from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And a part of our mission was actually to meet the women that we supported. So we would give small grants, but then mentor these women. And so we made a point to go to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to meet the women who had we'd given these microloans to. And they, these women were just, you know, with a small grant of $100, we could be supporting seven children, you know. And we met so many really wonderful, wonderful women in that context. And it was a real privilege to find that kind of sisterhood around the world, and to know that women are amazing wherever they are, and the things they're able to do in spite of great odds was really, really inspiring.
Well, I think it's wonderful work, and I'm sure that now that you've written this and are you could now do a novel.
Well, I could do a novel. Huh? Yeah. I could do a novel, but my spouse and I are thinking about writing a book together called Last Love. Since most stories are written about first love and falling in love and all the joy of that, but sometimes it takes a lot of years of living to figure out how to keep last love and how to make that interesting and vital and meaningful for years and years.
Okay, well, so as I said, I always tell people, keep writing. If you've done one book, the next one comes much more easily.
Well, that's good to know. Maybe I'll cut the time in half.
Okay. And so when you do, you have to come back on the program. Okay?
Oh, thank you so
much,
Patty.
I want to thank you so much again. It's Carol E. Anderson. And the book is available wherever books are sold, but it's available on Amazon. And You Can't Buy Love Like That, Growing Up Gay in the 60s. And it... my goodness, the 60s. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, but it's you have some interesting references in there, too, so I'm sure that people will enjoy it. And I want to thank you again, Carol, for being on the program, and I hope maybe now it'll take you like only a year to write your next book, okay?
Thank you, Patsy. I would love to come again.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Have a wonderful day.
Okay, thank you, Carol. Bye. Okay, well, exactly what I said, memoirs, everybody. Get out there and do your memoir. And when I'm talking about memoirs, if you have a family memoir that you really want to do, I would recommend you read Maria's Journey. Maria's Journey is one of the best, you know, this is a family memoir. It's written by Trish and Ray Arredondo, and it's about Ray's mother, Maria, who came up from Mexico to find a better life for her family here. And we're talking, you know, a long time ago. And when she got up here, of course, all the problems that she faced in the early years here are really fascinating. And her courage and the inspiring story of Maria is something that you might find reminiscent of somebody in your family, because all of us came from somewhere. And many of us had wonderful, wonderful grandparents, granduncles and aunts who really overcame a lot to be here and to make a success out of their life. So you can write a memoir about them. You can sit down and start writing and preserve these stories. So I hope that you will check this out. It's called Maria's Journey, and it is written by Trish and Ray Arredondo. It is available on Amazon, and you can go to their website and get some more information. And also, they tell there about how they went about the research. And this is the important thing when you're doing a story about a family, like when they came from another country, and all of the research available and areas where you can find the information, whether it's Ellis Island or one of the other places that you can collect the information you need, the Census Bureau, for example, about your family. And so go to mariasjourney.com, and you will be happy when you get there, because it's a very, very good website and will inspire you to write the story about your family. And meanwhile, I want to tell everyone, too late for Big Sur Workshop. The December workshop has just filled up, and that's a shame, because Andrea Brown's workshop for children's books, because we were talking about children's books today, is one of the best. But you still have time for the San Francisco Writers Conference, which is going to be on President's Day weekend, February 15th through the 18th. And if you register now, it's much cheaper. So register before the end of October, and you get a really, really good rate. And it's going to be, I have mentioned this over and over, that of all the workshops, I think the San Francisco, well, Andrew Brown's workshop for Big Sur for young adult and children's books is the best at any time. I mean, there's no workshop better than that. And then the other one is the San Francisco's Writers Conference, because you will get to really meet agents there. You will get to have a one-on-one with some of the greatest agents in the world. And people come from all over the world for this conference. So you will be really happy with the results. You will have wonderful workshops and meet wonderful people. And, of course, you'll be in San Francisco. So you'll be happy just for being in San Francisco. And it's February 15th through 18th. The price is low now if you register before the end of October. So I suggest you do that. And I also want, again, to remind you, please get a MyPillow. It is a wonderful, you cannot get this deal in a store. You go to a store and you can get deals on the pillow, but you can't get this buy one, get one, which is his original deal. And it is wonderful. And just use promo code PATZI, Patsy, that's me. And I just want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or perhaps on a stage, or in a movie someday. Wow, can you imagine? And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me. And we didn't have any interruptions today in our telephone call, so we're very happy. And he saluted me, and I'm saluting him. And I'm going to get his picture up on my website, because he's got an admirer out there. Okay. Bye-bye for now. Have a great weekend.